Well, good morning. How you doing? So my name is James. I work as a pastor up on the university campus up at UBCO. UBCO is a community of about 10,000 students when you include staff and faculty and admin up there. I heard that we're this year there's going to be almost 1,100 students who are from abroad from over 80 different countries. And about 1,700 students call the campus their home. So that's why we believe that there needs to be a presence of God's people in that place up there. So UCM, we really gather students in their neighborhood. We equip them for transformation. And then we release them to do the ministry, sending them into their spheres of influence. So this morning I want to talk to you a bit about sentness. Now, many of you know we have a couple kids, Asher and Solomon. And Asher is 5 years old and got to start kindergarten this year, which he was so pumped about. We live literally next door to Bankhead Elementary School, just 2 blocks from here. So Asher has known for several years as we walk our neighborhood that that was the school he's going to go to. We've been telling him that's the school he's going to go to. And even last year, he started telling people, I'm a bulldog. So that's a Bankhead bulldog. So we've been raising Asher to know where he's going. Now, I know I've only been a parent for 5 years, but can I give you a bit of parenting advice, those of you who are parents? Raise your kids to move out. Okay? Isn't it? Eh? There you go. We got some class on that. Good. Because isn't that our goal? When you have kids, most likely your desire is that one day they would grow up and that they would move out and hopefully that maybe they would have a family of their own one day, right? None of us want our kids to stay at home forever, never growing up, always being cared for. It's not the ideal, right? And we even have a phrase for that in our culture, right? When kids are like 25 and hanging out in mom's basement playing, you know, whatever video game system is popular right now, because I'm so out of touch. we have a phrase for that, right? It's called failure to launch. And that is not our goal. Now, here's my point. We need to raise up the church to be sent out. A church that's not sending its people out is not a healthy church. Our goal is not to have a church full of members that are perpetually dependent upon the staff, right? But a church full of maturing disciples who band together, being collectively sent out to reach our neighborhoods and to reach networks of people. We need to raise the church to move up and be sent out. Howard Snyder has a quote that I really like. He said, "Church people think about how to get people into the church. Kingdom people think about how to get the church into the world." He goes on to say, "Church people worry that the world might change the church, but kingdom people work to see the church change the world." And isn't that the kind of church you want to be a part of? Right? The church is not primarily a club or a volunteer association or a vendor of religious goods and services. You know, we're not here to sell a product, but rather the church is meant to be an alternative community that witnesses by living differently. And one of the ways that I think that we should live differently is being a body of sent people. And I want to talk to you a bit about that this morning. So this message really comes from Jesus' first words post-resurrection. Now, if you returned from death, I don't know if anyone here has, but if you returned from death and you had a chance to say one thing to your friends and your loved ones, what would be that one thing? Don't you think they would hang on that word? Well, Jesus did, right? John records that those first words of Jesus post-resurrection to the disciples. Now, you have to remember, they were scared. Peter had denied Jesus. Others had fled and gone into hiding. And many of them, they thought they were going to die too, right? And so Jesus, at his first re-encounter with them, he says these words. He begins with this. He says, "Peace be with you. That's our non-anxious leader, Jesus, right? He doesn't put weights on us. He begins with a word of peace. And I hope you receive this message with grace and love and a word of peace as well. But then he's very crystal clear, isn't he? On what he is calling the disciples to go and do now. He says, as the Father has sent me, I am sending you. So I want to talk to you a bit about a portrait of a sending God. This passage speaks about the sending nature of our God. A few years ago, I started teaching a class on the campus just for our UCM students where we would walk through the big story of Scripture. And over 10 weeks, I'd walk them through Genesis to Revelation. Yes, it is possible. You can do it. But you have to be good at abstracting the big themes of Scripture. And what I started to notice when we did that was that this theme was all the way through Scripture, that our God is a sending God. We see it in the Old Testament in the way that God chooses individuals and then a people to be sent. He chooses Abraham to leave his home to become a nation that would be blessed to be a blessing, right? Moses is sent to be God's representative to rescue and redeem the people of Israel out of slavery and into the promised land. And then he sends judges and he sends kings and he sends prophets, all to call people back into right relationship with him. And then, of course, the story climaxes with the person of Jesus. God sends his only son incarnate into our world. Jesus is sent. And so in the first chapters of John's gospel, he describes it this way. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. In John's gospel in particular, it's littered with this reference to sentness. 55 times the word sent is used in John's gospel. Oh, I'm sorry. This is why I don't like doing my own slides. So he... 55 times the word sentness is used in John's gospel. And mostly the word is used of Jesus describing God. He says, the one who sent him. That's how he describes God, the one who sent him. For example, after he talks with the Samaritan woman at the well, the disciples are concerned about whether he's eaten or not. And in chapter 4, verse 34, Jesus says, my food is not to do the will of him. My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. So Jesus says he's fueled by God's sentness. And then in defense of the Jewish leaders questioning his authority, Jesus says, by myself I can do nothing. I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me. His motives are driven by his sentness. And then in chapter 6, verse 38, he says, for I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me. So even Jesus' own will, we sang about that actually, is conformed to the sentness of God. And then finally, nearing his last hour, his final hour, he's heard in his last prayer to the Father, he says, as you have sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world. Now, there are several more passages like this where Jesus describes God's character as ascending God. And just like how Jesus' very nature is informed by God's sentness, as we reach the end of the Gospels, Jesus begins to call his disciples to be defined by this sentness as well. And that's where we come to our passage. Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. So our God is a sending God. And if we don't understand that, if we don't understand that that's key to his character and nature, I think we miss really what God is about. So what would it look like, First Baptist, if this entire congregation of maturing disciples lived every day as sent ones? And not just individually, right? Because we need to live out that call individually, but we also need to discern what that means collectively, right? To particular places and particular people. Now, once you begin to allow sentness to define who you are, the natural kind of follow-up question begins to be, to whom are we sent, right? And I think that's the critical question that disciples of Jesus need to ask every single day. I always tell my students, actually, when I get up on the campus, I park my car, and then I begin walking to the buildings, and I always have a walk, and I always use that walk to begin to ask this question, To whom have you sent me today, God? Who do you have for me today? What will my day be full of? What opportunities are you going to give me? And it's a question I think we need to constantly be asking, both at a personal level, but also corporately as a ministry. And I remember the first time we asked this question at one of our vision meetings with our students, and we started kind of pushing on this question, like, to whom are we sent? And our students' leaders were actually, they're kind of hesitant to pinpoint it. They didn't want to get out the pin and pinpoint it. They didn't want to narrow the scope. They wanted to reach the whole campus, right? And but the problem with trying to reach everybody is that it's very easy to end up not reaching anybody. I was thinking about this week, that when I was younger, how many of you guys have a garden? Yes, lots of gardens. Okay, and what's your favorite thing to do in the garden? So your least favorite thing to do is weed, isn't it? Well, when I was young, I had a sister, and we would fight a lot, and my mother would give us the job of weeding as a discipline, as punishment. So it would be like, you got 10 minutes weeding. Do you want 20? Right? And you usually get to 20. But in my mind, I thought it was just about killing time. So I just go out there and I pick kind of the easiest weeds, one from over here and one from over there, and just kind of kill the time, right? But what my mom eventually tried to teach us when she started checking in on us is that she wanted to see a noticeable difference. She encouraged us, when you go out to the garden, to pick a particular area and weed that section so that she could notice what work we had done, right? I think the same advice is something that we need to take in ministry as well. And this is what we gave the same advice to our students, that we encouraged them to pick a missional focus, to pick a particular area of campus, to pick a particular people group to focus their efforts on. And this year in particular, we actually did not launch our core groups. Our core groups are kind of like our missional communities. They're sort of like small groups, but they're not small. They're kind of mid-size. And we this year we said we are not going to start a group that does not have a leader or a cluster of leaders that has a particular focus, a missional focus, before we start it. And so one of our groups, you know, this one leader had a heart for international students. And so she started to band people around her who had a heart for internationals. We had another student say, you know what, I just want to love on dorm students. So critical to reach these first-year students. So she band people around that. And they actually, they're trying to find things and ways that they can be missional. And I think yesterday, they decided to start doing grocery runs. Because a lot of students, it's really difficult to, like, get groceries. You know, if you don't have a vehicle. And so they're just trying to find ways to love on those particular groups. We found that groups that have a particular focus, either a place or a people group, end up being more successful at including new people into our community. And we've then had to ask this question as a ministry as well, as a big picture of even our ministry, because the campus is too big. And so we've begun to admit that if we don't reach first-year students, that our ministry is sunk. And so we've begun to focus on first-year students. And particularly because we found that if first-year students don't connect in the first 3 weeks of school, it's very unlikely that they'll connect with our ministry all year. So we've begun to have a very clear answer to this question, to whom are we sent? And we hope that even within our ministry, that people know that answer. So we're called to first-year students, and particularly those who live on the university campus. Now, once you begin to allow sentness to define, you know, who you're meant to be, and once you begin to answer this question, to whom are we sent, you're left with some very challenging questions of, like, so then what? What do we do? What does that look like? How do we do this? And unfortunately, I can't give you a 5-step process to this, but because I believe sentness is not about implementing a new program, but it's about having a posture of presence in the lives of those to whom God gives us. So there's no program for sentness, but we found that the more that you're present, the more you'll be able to answer that question, to whom, Lord? And the more that you'll know exactly what you're called to do and how to do it. And we call that a posture of presence. Now, you guys understand having a good posture, right? Having a good posture is very important, right? As I look at Dale and Gary slumping over. A friend of mine told me that if you want to have good posture, you should imagine the string at the back of your, you know, at the top of your head and just pull. So everybody try to have good posture right now. Readjust yourself. Okay, yeah. See, every single one of you. So only a few of you that didn't have to readjust, right? As soon as I said, have some good posture. So posture is about positioning yourself. And what we realize is having good posture is something that we have to kind of constantly recorrect, right? We have to kind of constantly attend to it. We have to constantly adjust. And, you know, those people who, you know, you may know them, one or two in your circles, who actually have good posture, you've seen that they have begun to develop this habit so well that it becomes a habit and becomes natural. And so I think it's possible. We've found this to be true over a history of having a presence on the campus as well. During my first couple years at UBCO, it was clear the ministry had established a real spiritual presence on the campus. You know, students who lived on campus, I think they know that there's a place they can come to on Sunday nights and worship God. I found that, our groups are something that people know that they can come and connect in groups. But about 3 years ago, we had this question kind of nagging in the back of our minds. And that question was, if our ministry wasn't here, would anybody care? And even to press it even more pointedly to our student leaders, we said, you know, what difference do you think that this ministry is making on our culture at the campus? Like, if there is a gathering of God's people, and we have a gathering somewhere between 100 and 120 students that are connected to our ministry, if that's happening on God's on the campus, then it should have some outward reflection. And that's when we started doing what we call minding the gap. You've seen this before, hey, like, at subway stations, or at least maybe you've seen it on movies or television. It's a note to pay attention to the dangerous gap in the middle, right? It's don't fall in. Well, that's exactly what our students started doing. They started paying attention to the gaps on our campus. And we started asking, well, what areas of need are there on the campus, and where could we fill in? And at first we went to the administration and we said, hey, what areas do you really need help on this campus? And they were developing a trail maintenance project at that time, and they, you know, wanted us to get involved in that. And we did that. And then one of our students found out there was a food bank on the campus. And so we started, you know, trick-or-eating on Halloween and collecting food items. But we were still really trying to find that thing that maybe we could just really love and press in on our campus. And that's when we began to hear about Red Frogs. Now, you guys have heard me, some of you have heard me talk about Red Frogs, so you're familiar with it, but I'll share a little bit about it. So Red Frogs started in Sydney, Australia, and it was when a local youth pastor decided to practice some faithful presence among his skateboarding kids who were graduating from high school. And now different in Australia than in Canada. In Canada, we have this sort of like one night, grad night, right? Well, in Australia, they have grad week, and they all descend on the beaches in the Gold Coast, and they just rent all these hotel rooms, and it's just a party all week long. Well, Andy saw a need and began to serve in it. He collected a bunch of people from his church and went to be a sober presence in the midst of that party scene, and just really started to make a difference, to the point now where they've been doing this for 15 years, and they've literally changed the culture in Australia with this work that they do. Reducing harm in the midst of party culture. Well, it didn't take us long to figure out how this applies to university culture. And as you see the photos kind of moving by, you'll see how we began to do a similar thing on our campus, where we started to set up at big outdoor parties and even indoor parties. We went to the student union a couple years ago and offered to do this, and they said, sure, we'd love to have you. And we didn't really know what we were doing when we started. We went to our first party, and we ended up serving about 1,000 cups of water and gave away 300 donuts and 500 freezies and tons of Red Frog candies. And then it started the ball rolling. And by the end of our first year, the student union had basically gave us the invitation to be at every single one of the parties that would happen the following year. And all this happened because of a group of Christians who said, They want to be sent, and they want to commit to a particular area and a particular people group on our campus. Now, there are three qualities. I'm just going to wrap up with maybe three qualities about this posture of presence to kind of give you help you nuance it. And the first one is this. A quality of presence has to be adaptive. And one of the things that we found while we were trying to even serve in this particular area was that we needed to be adaptive. So just like you kind of keep repositioning your posture, sometimes you got to adapt, right? And we found, like, at first we were invited to all the parties where, you know, alcohol was an issue, and we were trying to be helpful in helping reduce harm in those parties. But then we started getting invited to a bunch of other types of parties. And before we knew it, we were invited to a Muslim holiday festival called Idi. We were invited to a Hindu color run. And even our first year, we were invited to a fashion show. I don't know if you saw that photo there, but we were wearing a nice jacket there. And some of our students asked us, like, they asked me, well, Jay, why are we going to these things, like a fashion show? Like, why are we going to that? There's not, you know? And I said, you know, we are about relationships, and so we're going to go wherever there's a need. We're going to go wherever invited. We're going to pay attention to the invitation. And we started making inroads to communities that wouldn't normally have that opportunity. The second thing is we've realized that presence needs to be consistent. If we're just faithfully consistent in being present in people's lives, opportunities will come up, and we need to pay attention to them. If you look at Luke chapter 10, it's where Jesus sends out the 72 disciples. He sends them out, and he encourages them to find a home of peace. Right? He says, find people of peace. And what is his instruction to them? Do you guys remember this passage? He says, stay in that home, don't go around to a bunch of other houses. He encourages them to practice this practice of consistency, of being faithfully present to particular people. And we found that consistency is key for us. As I told you this year, the Student Union has continued to invite us back to be a part of these parties. The services coordinator this year told me, which kind of blew my mind, he said, oh, hey, James, did you know that we're actually not allowed to have these large outdoor parties now without your guys' presence there? I was like, what? And he said that they have now, but because we've been faithfully, consistently doing this practice, the university has noticed that it needs a harm reduction program in the midst of party culture. And so now we're it. we're their harm reduction program. Faithful, consistent presence can make change. Lastly, I want to talk about having an attentive presence. So having a posture presence has a lot to do with, I think, listening. And in each situation, we're trying to listen to what our relationships require of us and responding to our capacity. So we have to just be able to do what God allows us to do, what we're capable of doing. And we believe that it means that you pay attention to each relationship and you give a nuanced response. So we don't have any outreach programs. There's no silver bullet. I think those days are gone, we know this. But that it's really about having a nuanced response to each relationship, paying attention to what God is calling us to do in the midst of it. And we actually call this, with Red Frogs, we call this paying attention to the ones. So we have three mottos with Red Frogs. There are three values, but we put mottos to our values so our students can remember them. So our first motto is, we serve our butts off. It just speaks to our willingness to just go the extra length. Like, our students pick up garbage after these, you know, after these events. They arrange tables and push the chairs in the cafeteria. We have people coming up to us saying, why are you doing this, right? Our second motto is, we say, we bring the awesome. And that just speaks to our value of integrity. You know, our students are a fun bunch, and what we try to do is surpass people's expectations of us when they book us. So they want us there for a water table, but we bring gourmet donuts and freezies, and we blow their socks off. And lastly, though, and this is where I want to get to, is that we are the value of relationships. So I always say we're not going to do anything that doesn't give us the context of building relationships. And we call that paying attention to the ones. So we go out and we serve the hundreds, but I encourage our students to pay attention to the ones. Who is that one person that God might have for you while you're serving tonight? Who stands out? Who did you make a connection with? Who is someone that you maybe you were even in relationship with previously, but they're now seeing you in a different light? And what we do is we end every single night, we pack up the gear, we bring it to my car, and we have this meeting outside of my car, and I always ask them, how did the night go? You know, what can we do different next time? And who are your ones? And we just go around the circle, and everybody shares a story or a highlight from the night. Last year, this allowed us to serve over 10,000 students on campus, giving away that many cups of water, over 2,000 donuts, and 3,700 freezies. I'm just going to tell you one story about paying attention to the ones, about this girl, Alyssa, here. So during Frosh Week last year, Alyssa and I found this girl who was, you know, looking ready to pass out. She had had too much. A lot of these students, these parties are alcohol-free, but we actually find it's actually more detrimental because what they do is they just preload beforehand. And so a lot of people come into the party, and about half hour, an hour into the party, it's hitting them. And this girl had drunk more than she could handle and was looking like she was going to fall over. So we found her, and we brought her to a first aid, and we brought her back to dorm. But first aid wasn't confident in leaving her in dorm, and so they decided to send her to the hospital. Well, Alyssa decided to go with her. I said, Alyssa, you don't need to do that. And she said, yeah, I want to go with her. She got ditched at the party. She was all alone. She doesn't have anybody to take care of her. And so Alyssa went to the hospital, and she stayed with her the whole time that she was there. And when she was released, the girl was feeling a little embarrassed and didn't want to return to dorm. So Alyssa offered to take her back to her place, and she could just crash there until she was ready to go home. And that night when I called Alyssa to check in, and Alyssa said, well, James, I think I found my one tonight. And it's that kind of dedication that is making Red Frogs an invaluable presence on our university campus. I want to conclude with just this little story. It's a fictional story about when Jesus ascended to the Mount of Olives. And this is a picture of the Mount of Olives. And so when Jesus ascends, he's welcomed back by, you know, the angels, and they want to throw him a big party. And one of them says, Lord, let's go now and tell the world about how you conquered the powers of darkness and death. And Jesus says, no, it's not going to be like that. And then an angel asks, well, why? What do you mean? Like, this is the moment we've been waiting for. And Jesus says, I have another plan. And they say, well, what other plan? And Jesus looked down, and as he saw the disciples kind of disappearing like ants, Jesus said, they're going to do it. Them? Do you trust them? What if they fail? And Jesus says, I have no other plan. It's their destiny, it's their responsibility, it's their commission to carry the message of the gospel to people everywhere. And Jesus says, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. Would you join me in a word of prayer?